Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Master,
Blessed Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Up early this morning and said she felt a thrill just thinking about having service today, and I feel that way too. It's an interesting thing, because in giving these talks, I would say that I am first and foremost the receiver. God fills me up. My eyes close and I feel Him completely lifting me up into His presence. And it's the greatest thrill, it's the greatest joy, it's the greatest service that I could think of doing. I can't even hardly call it a service, because I feel like I've received so much. On Friday, we celebrated and marked the Guru Purnima Day. That is a day celebrated all across India. And the guru-disciple relationship is one that we know through other words, through the relationship primarily perhaps here in the West between Jesus and His disciples. And it perfectly exemplifies what the guru-disciple relationship is. And I'd like to read a little bit from what I wrote about the Satguru. The term Satguru, Sat means the eternal self. So the guru who represents and has established him or herself into the eternal self comes from the deepest spiritual tradition, one who is capable of leading a disciple to the highest consciousness described in various religious mystical traditions. The disciple Satguru is a unique relationship between aspirant and guru. In order for a guru to be qualified for such a relationship, they have raised the Kundalini life force to the highest states of spiritual consciousness and become stable in Brahma Nirvana, or the universal vision. There are those who have had experiences in divine consciousness but are not yet established in it. He or she may be a teacher but not a satguru, as that one cannot lift another beyond his or her own realization. The principle is universal. Even though the term guru is an Eastern term, it has a universal meaning. Whether the term used is guru, prophet, rabbi, priest or father, master, mystic, shaman, sant or saint, or other term found around the world, the principle is the same. A qualified teacher is one who can raise the consciousness of an individual or group to the transcendent and permanent union with the divine. And Purnima means full or complete. The term Purnima is rooted in the meaning full or complete and relates to the full moon marking the date of Guru Purnima. The full moon is significant in Hinduism as the birth of Vyasa, the great sage of India, and it was on the full moon that the writing of the Mahabharata was begun, and also when it was completed. For the Buddha, the full moon is also full of significance, as the Buddha was born on a full moon, gained enlightenment, and left the body in Mahanirvana on full moon days. The symbolism of the full moon. The full moon, which cycles from darkness to light, is symbolic for relative human consciousness that can be in darkness or absent of spiritual awareness or filled with spiritual illumination. This waning and waxing also reflects a chela's appreciation for one's own guru. Full appreciation for the Satguru can only come with becoming established in his or her divine consciousness. It is only then that one can truly comprehend who or what the Guru truly is and the role the Guru has played in one's own attainment. My own Gurudev. I felt the spiritual power coming from Mother Hamilton when I first met her. One who has had this type of Guru Shakti, or power of the Guru, there is no doubt about the power transmitted from the spiritual master and the purity and uplifting nature of it. This spiritual transformation brought to me by my Guru made me know that being in the divine presence was not just a poetic notion, but an ultimate reality that can be experienced. The Guru's omniscience. However, a more complete comprehension of my Guru was long in coming. I oftentimes viewed her from my human perspective. However, repeated experiences with Mother's spiritual power demonstrated that it transcended time and space and made itself known to me wherever I traveled in the world. Once I was traveling in the Sahara Desert and had been doing so for several days by truck, without any road. There is little or no vegetation. There is just sand dune after sand dune. And occasionally we would get down from the truck, and on one of those occasions I was standing out in the middle of the desert looking out over these rolling sand dunes. And as I stood there, I smelled Mother's perfume that she wore at the time, a white lilac fragrance. And it was so strong and so marked, and all of a sudden her presence just enfolded me. And here I was, halfway across the world, and it was as if I was standing in her own presence. Such repeated kinds of experiences proved to me that there is no lack of the Guru anywhere that we are at. I remember once on that same journey I was in England, and I had purchased a ticket for the crossing of the channel. And after I had left the ticket purchasing place, I realized that they had put the wrong date. I'd wanted to leave the next day, and they put it for the day after. And so I went back, and they had just closed. There were several people who were in there working, but the door was locked. So I knocked on the door politely, and no one even bothered to look up. And I knocked a little more persistently. I thought it was an easy thing for them to do, to change the date. And they refused. They pointed at the clock and indicated that they were closed. And for some reason, the spiritual mood that I was in at that moment just hit me like a ton of bricks. And tears started flowing down my eyes, and I was walking in a bewildered state through the streets. And I felt completely bereft and abandoned by not only the human agency of the ticket agent, but by God as well. And as I wandered through the streets like that and tears, unfortunately it was nighttime, I think, and nobody else was on the streets, or they would have wondered what in the world was going on with me. But as I walked through the streets like that, suddenly this tremendous light, and it was like a spiritual arm that rested itself across my shoulders. And a deep healing peace came into me. I had felt so abandoned and so lost to everything, and particularly to God. And so in this way, the Guru's presence came, and it healed me in that moment of that separation. And I felt such a tremendous wave of peace sweep all over me. And we realize that time or space are playthings when it comes to God and Gurus, that they are not barriers that are difficult to overcome, but that they're easily seen through. I wrote also about Mother's protection and how at a time we used to meet at Bonnie's house, and during the summer times we used to have, or springtime, and we used to have volleyball games and a picnic down at Matthew's Beach afterwards, and we did that on many occasions. And sometimes Mother would come down and be with us. And so one time we were down there, and there was dark, menacing clouds all around us. But right on Matthew's Beach, it was as if there was a beam of light shining out of the heavens. There was a hole in the clouds there. And no rain touched us, and we had this perfectly lovely time all in the sunshine. And, of course, we all ascribe that to Mother and her protection. And also another time, though, is a very strange time for me, in that I was driving to Bonnie's house for service, going down North Gateway. And perhaps I was a bit in a distracted mood as I was going to service and thinking about Mother and seeing her. And as I did so, there was suddenly a car was stopped right in the middle of the lane. I don't know why they stopped, but they were stopped right in the middle of the lane. There's no reason for it, and I slammed on my brakes. And I knew my car, and I knew the distance, and I was quickly headed, even though my brakes were locked up. I wasn't going to stop in time, and I knew it. And so I was preparing myself for the collision. And I was within inches of the car when suddenly it was as if you had spliced a film, and my car was 10 feet further back than it was before. And it was a jump in time and space. I can't explain it other than saying it in that way. And I continued to skid, and I came within inches of hitting the back bumper of the other car, but I didn't hit it. And I knew that Mother and God's protection were with me and made that possible. And again, time and space and physics suddenly hold no sway whatsoever in God and Guru's protection in this way. And so these are the kinds of things that happen. And we, I think, all of us have had some kinds of experience. Rick was telling me about an experience where he was driving through the desert. And he was driving in a car that was not completely familiar to him, but he looked down and he saw that the empty gauge, the light had come on, and he knew that it left a certain amount of mileage when those lights come on. And he proceeded on rather than going back to the last gas station, but there's no gas stations in sight. And as he traveled 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 miles, still no gas station in sight. And he stopped and he called his AAA service, and they didn't even know where he was, much less get anybody to him. And so he decided to go on, and he kept his mind on God and Gurus the whole way. And he traveled so many more miles than that, far more than what an empty gauge should be able to give you. And he made it all the way to the small little wide spot in the road that had one gas station with one single pump, and they were open, and he was able to get his gas. And so God always is there, and the masters are always there to protect us. But they don't just protect us, they also test us. And I thought I would read from the Cross and Lotus Journal, Memories of Mother by Judy Ellis, who's a long-time disciple and sincere disciple of Mother Hamilton's. And she writes, "Several times during the 14 years I was in contact with my guru, it was my destiny to go under the knife, so to speak, with Mother acting as the divine surgeon. Painful as these operations were, though, I'd submit to them over and over again just to be with her again. People can say that this one or that one is a saint, a master, an enlightened one, but unless you have the experience within yourself of this person's greatness, these claims are empty to you. Through the grace of God and Guru, I recognized him fully present in Mother's form, and so I accepted the verbal spankings I was given from time to time, knowing that they were needed for my spiritual growth. In his autobiography, Yogananda tells us that his guru didn't spare the rod either. My guru could not be bribed even by love. He showed no leniency to anyone that, like myself, had willingly offered to become a disciple. Whether Master and I were surrounded by his students or by strangers, or were alone together, he always spoke plainly and upbraided sharply. No trifling lapse into shallowness or inconsistency escaped his rebuke. This flattening of the ego treatment was hard to endure, but my unchangeable resolve was to allow Sri Yukteswar to iron out all of my psychological kinks. As he labored at this titanic transformation, I shook many times under the weight of his disciplinary hammer. "If you don't like my words, you are at liberty to leave any time," Master assured me. "I want nothing from you but your own improvement. Stay only if you feel benefited." I am immeasurably grateful for the humbling blows he dealt my vanity. I sometimes felt that, metaphorically, he was discovering and uprooting every diseased tooth in my jaw. The hard core of egotism is difficult to dislodge except rudely. With its departure, the divine finds at last an unobstructed channel. In vain, it seeks to percolate through flinty hearts of selfishness. In quoting from Mother, "I like to get out in the middle of the battlefield," Mother once told us, "because, you see, I'm not battling the real you, I'm battling the little you, the ego, that one that wants to keep you from becoming everything that you should become in the fullness of God. But if he has the courage and strength and the will to take straight forward what the Guru can tell him about what's wrong inside of him, then he stands a chance of making progress a million times faster than he would otherwise. Just imagine what it means to be rid of your troubles, of all your burdens, and to be filled with the peace, the joy, the wisdom, the bliss, the power of God, and to be beholding to no one but God. No matter what anyone thinks about what I say, think, or do, it doesn't bother me. I may be, because I am an actress on the stage, affected just for the moment because of the play and because of what I have to say or do with the other individual, but inside, I am totally unaffected. I worry over them. I cry over them. And sometimes I become angry with them. And sometimes I use the stick of the love of the crucible because they've left me no choice. But that is a rare occasion indeed. But there's one thing. When I use that stick, I always pour the salve of love on top of it to heal the wound. And each and every one of you who has been with me so intimately here knows that this is true. I take you all in my arms." A devotee of Mother's, and an energetic one at that, became instrumental one sunny afternoon in ensuring that Mother would have an opportunity to apply the salve of love to a wound she had to inflict upon me that day. The occasion was a wedding, and Mother was to officiate. Before the ceremony began, someone mentioned that our guru had been suffering quite a bit because of a problem she was having with one of her legs. With this in mind, I began to pray that God would relieve Mother of her pain by allowing me to take it on, at least some of it. I prayed. Inwardly, I concentrated on this thought, "Please, God, give me Mother's pain." The ceremony took place, and now people drifted in and out of the small circles, socializing and enjoying each other's company. At one point, I found myself in the presence of my guru, as well as a couple of other devotees. Naively, I proceeded to tell Mother what I had been praying for, what I hoped God would do to remedy the pain she had been experiencing. Well, little did I know that this commitment of mine was to lead me straight to the chopping block again. Within earshot of others, Mother looked directly into my eyes and said, "You couldn't handle it." And she meant it. And there was more. One of the folks listening in on this humbly commented that the best, and in truth the only way we could help Mother, would be to work on ourselves. Mother smiled in agreement, praising the devotee for her wisdom. Now, when one is stung, one usually doesn't dare venture near the source of that sting for quite a while, fearful of being stung once again, needless to say. So, I kept a polite distance from Mother for the duration of this gathering. When it was time for us to go, along comes my energetic friend inquiring if we'd received our goodbye hugs from Mother yet. Well, Mother had hugged me earlier on, and there was no way I was going to go near her again that day, lest another reprimand be in order. Once was more than enough on any given occasion, believe me. But my friend persisted. "You must say goodbye before you leave," she said. "Oh, no, it's all right," I answered, not wanting to raise suspicion of any sort. "I'm fine, just fine." "Go on," she insisted. "You must get one more hug before we go." So I approached Mother. She was sitting down. We hugged each other. Then she proceeded to fill me with so much love that I all but floated out of the building that day. My friend couldn't help but notice a very blissful Judy after that encounter. "Now, aren't you glad you went for one more hug?" she asked. "Yes, thank you." These little antidotes are so dear to my heart, reminding me once more of the power and the majesty and the indescribable mother love I so desperately needed then and still do. Isn't that a lovely writing? Whenever we approach a great mountain, it reminds me of approaching Mount Rainier, and whether approach it from the north and driving towards in that direction, or the south, or the east, or the west. It's all the same mountain, but it offers quite different views of the mountain depending on which way you approach it. And it's identifiably the same mountain, and yet it looks so different depending on the day and what angle and direction you're looking at it from. It's a most beautiful and majestic mountain. A guru is like that, only even more so, even more mysterious, even more changeable. There are so many directions, there are so many views that a lifetime would not be enough to fill up all the different ways that you could talk about and refer to the guru and experiences with her or him. Mother was inscrutable. I never felt that I could know Mother. I could be with her. I could feel so intimately in connection with her, whether I was in her physical presence or not. For the first many years that I was with Mother, I didn't even know that I could call Mother or contact her outside of services. All of my contacts with Mother were listening to her talks and then the brief hugs afterwards and some comments that oftentimes were earth-shaking to me. And then off I would go. And sometimes I thought, well, if Bonnie didn't suddenly live where she lives, I wouldn't even know how to contact Mother. I had no information about her at all. Yet I'd been initiated by her and all the rest. That's the way that God arranged it. And I traveled quite a bit. I lived in other places, and I traveled around the world. And all through this, I kept my mind upon God and Guru, chanting Om Shri Ram. I remember the first night I met Mother was on a Wednesday night, and we chanted her version of Om Shri Ram. And I wasn't even sure that I liked the tune at the time. It was rather haunting to me, but I never forgot it. And I chanted it, and wherever I went, and I did my Kriya Yoga, and I prayed to Mother, and wherever I went once again. And it wasn't always easy. I remember when I was driving truck, and I would be in the back of a sleeper, and I would be doing my Kriya, and as I was stretching and touching my toes and coming back up, I couldn't even sit up fully upright because it was in cramped quarters. But I kept my vows, and I kept focused on Guru, and she always felt close to me. I could always go inside, and I felt her thoughts. I felt her guidance. Now, you can easily ask, how is it the one individual could be present with me and with so many others who had their minds focused on her? And the reason is because her mind was merged in divine consciousness. And as a result of that, her consciousness easily transcended time and space. And that I could be anywhere in this world, and I could know her, she could know me and her thoughts. Whether she knew in her, what we might say, her human consciousness or not, is not necessarily known. She said no, that she didn't always know what God was doing through her. And I find that to be the case as well, that oftentimes my mind is drawn to somebody, and I know that their thoughts are upon me and thinking of me. And there is a, as if there is a kind of tunnel that exists between the two of us, a connection that is made immediately through that concentrated mind upon me. And I can feel the divine consciousness being drawn through my form. Now, I don't say that with any sense of ego, because it's not me that's doing it. I wouldn't know how to do it. But it is what I experience. This morning, as I sat and the sun was just beginning to come up, and I just suddenly felt a spiritual ambiance that went out from me in every direction, above and below and to every side of me. And it went out, and I could feel it spreading out all through over this earth. Now, it's not something that I did. It's something that was done through me. And so I know somewhat through my own little bit of experience who Mother or how she experienced things in this way. I do not claim to be in the state of consciousness that Mother was. She is tremendous. She is a rare commodity to have been in this world or on any world. I'm inwardly prompted to give you an experience that I once had that I don't think I spoke about in public. Perhaps I have, but I don't remember. It's such an unusual experience that it's something that I've held very close to me. But when I was in my year of silence and solitude at Cloud Mountain, I had an experience come upon me, and somehow the thought came into my mind that if I ever had a name other than what I have, it would be Premanand. Premanand, it's divine love that leads to bliss. And I thought that word, and I felt it go out and out and out. It was like carried on waves of water, only it was waves of spirit. And it went out in space, and it went all the way to another planet. And there on another planet were minds that were equally immersed in the divine consciousness. And we began to converse with each other, and that they were disciples of Mother's as well. And so we talked about Mother and what a tremendous will she had and what tremendous love that she has and all the rest of it. And they knew her intimately. And this was a tremendous experience. And I felt the reality of it. I knew the reality of it as I experienced this inner communion. And it's happened many times since with these same individuals. And they are tremendous spiritual souls, much higher evolved than the average citizens upon this earth. All that planet is more highly evolved. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a tremendous thing. Mother, one time in thinking about confirmation, about this experience that I had, and I listened to a talk to Mother's the very next day. That was a Saturday night, and it was a Sunday morning. And I listened to a talk of Mother's, and in that talk, she talked about having communion with people from other planets or beings from other planets. And I'd never heard her, or I had not recalled her ever saying that before. And so it's interesting that it came as confirmation in this kind of way. We are definitely not alone in this universe. It's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. The number of suns, the number of planets, the number of possibilities for life on other planets that we would think that we're the one and only. And it's a wonderful thing that in spirit, that we can commune with beings of like nature wherever they are. And so this is a tremendous uplifting experience. And so Mother is not only guru of those on this planet, but on many other planets as well. She is a rare soul indeed. She came to this earth in a state of full realization already. Only when she took incarnation, she chose to come to clothe herself in ignorance, you might say. Now, it is different than the ignorance that normal souls usually come in, because we are bound by that ignorance. It is a result of the karmic binds and that we have created ourselves upon our souls, and we have to work through it. But Mother came as an avataram, one who is already in a completely realized state. Only when she came with an ordinary consciousness. Now, Ananda Moy Ma came as a realized soul as well. And she kept that realization from birth, but at a certain point, she decided to take on a veil of ignorance. And for 7 years, she existed like that, and she went through all the different kinds of sadhana as she was inwardly directed to do, so that she could direct others in their own sadhana. Well, Mother went through all of these experiences, very difficult ones from a human standpoint. And one thing that does for you is it keeps you in a humble state, because you realize things just aren't so easy to do. And she had tremendous compassion for the different states and different experiences that people had. She once said that she went through everything that a woman would go through in this lifetime. And so she had many difficult things as well as many wonderful things. But she could relate to what everybody went through. And as she would say, standing there all 5 feet plus of her total height, and she would say, if I, one little woman, could do it, you can do it. There's no excuse, you see. She didn't have much formal education at all. She didn't graduate from high school or university. She was called upon to go to work because her family was in an impoverished state. And yet she was one of the most brilliant, self-educated people I'd ever met. And she was constantly working to improve herself. She said she would be hearing somebody speak, and if they pronounced a word differently than she would pronounce it, she'd go home and she'd look it up in the dictionary. And she would see what the pronunciation guide said for it. She didn't know how to sit down and eat properly at a formal table. And so she would study other people and how they did things, and she would read about it. And she was always interested in educating herself. Until her very last moment, she was always interested in learning something new. Now you say, how can you be fully God-realized, as she certainly was, and always be learning something new? And it's because there is an interplay that goes on between the human and the divine. In the divine is total and pure consciousness of oneness. And as a result of that, you have access and are in connection with all the intelligence, all the wisdom, all the light, everything that God is. But in order to inhabit a human consciousness, you have to assume a certain level of separation and ignorance. And therefore, you come into this human consciousness in a limited state. And as a result of that, you're able to relate to the people who are around you. Otherwise, you would just be absorbed in that absolute and total oneness. And so it seems incongruous in a way to us that you can be both fully human and fully divine. And yet that's exactly what Mother taught us, that you can have both. And if God be limited by anything, then God cannot be God, can he? Because God is not limited by anything. So God is both human and divine. God is both the absolute spirit and has manifested himself as the multiplicity of all creation. He is both. We have to get over this idea that somehow if we experience our humanness, we must be in some degraded state. Now, it's true that until we have gone over the top and realized our total and complete oneness with God, that we, in our human state, we don't experience fully our divine nature. But don't think that your human nature is the primary obstacle. The primary obstacle is the notion of separation from God. So accepting that God is manifesting as you right now, in whatever state of consciousness you are, you short-circuit the human ego. You go right around it, and you connect yourself directly with God. There's no way that the ego can keep you separated then, you see. So then, if your practice is to constantly affirm that it is God who is manifesting within you, whether it is in a state of enlightenment or a state of ignorance, whether it is in a state of bliss or a state of pain, whatever you are, that is God perfectly manifesting as you. Papa assured us that everything is exactly as it ought to be, and everything is exactly God. The world is God, and that includes you. So once you cure yourself of this notion, now you say, well, if I think that I'm God, then just anything that I do is okay. But you have to be sincere about it, you see. You can't play games with it. And you can't just say, well, I'm God, and therefore anything I want to do, from a human ego standpoint, see, you're not really doing it then. You're keeping yourself in a state of separation. You're saying, I. But when you say and focus your mind on God manifesting as you in this moment, and you reach out and open yourself to that flow of consciousness that's constantly coming to you, that's coming directly from God, you see, you will begin to filter out everything that is not God. One of my favorite stories is the room that was held in darkness for 1,000 years. For 1,000 years, darkness reigned supreme. It was the absolute ruler within that room. And then one day, the door was open and the light came flooding in. And darkness fled and had absolutely no sway and no power. That room is you. It's your consciousness. And when that doorway opens and the divine light comes flooding in, darkness cannot exist in that light. The two are mutually exclusive. And so you open that door and you let that light come flooding in. Now the Guru comes for many purposes. One is the Guru is here as an example. If that one has not raised their consciousness into the divine consciousness and become established there. Now this is important because different ones can be in uplifted states and repeatedly be in uplifted states, but it's a far different thing to become established. Meher Baba said that once an individual was established in the fifth chakra, that is the place of Dharma, where Dharma is known, that is right action and truth is known and spoken, then that one is qualified to be a guru. But there's more to go still. You move beyond the fifth chakra to the sixth, and in the sixth you move into the sixth Christ consciousness, the Kutashta Chaitanya, as it is called in India. And there you feel the uplifted nature of divine consciousness. You go beyond the notion of this is truth in as something that you are receiving. Rather, you become that truth. I and my Father are one, said Jesus. From that Christ consciousness, there is still the notion of I and my Father, but there is oneness, you see. They all go together. This is an extremely subtle state, but it's true. It's something that you experience. And so you're feeling your oneness with God, and yet there's still a sense of I that has a thin veil of separation. This is Christ consciousness within you. And it's a tremendous thing. It's something that Jesus came to exemplify and to teach. You see, if we didn't have examples of those who had attained that truth, then we would think that's only for one person in all of history or a few that we read about in stories. But you meet somebody who lives in that consciousness, and it makes you know that you too can experience that state of purity, that state of bliss, that state of light that exists within the divine consciousness. But there is a one higher state to go from Christ's consciousness, and that is to total oneness with God. That is the Sat. Sat is the eternal being. Chit is the intelligence and conscious awareness, and Ananda is the bliss of that oneness with God. And all three of these make up the name of God, Sat, Chid, Ananda. And these are the three different aspects of God. This is the Trinity. And so you can say that the three and the one are one and the same. Really, the three are different aspects, and yet they each represent the total purity of God consciousness. And so when you are in God consciousness, you experience the eternal nature of your being. There is no beginning. There's no end. There's no birth. There's no death. There's nothing of the sort. It is eternal. It has always been. It will always be. And therefore, when you relate to this body or anything of this world, you realize that it comes and it goes. There's a birth and a death. Anything that there's a birth and death of is not the absolute God. There are many religions that talk about worshiping the one God, but they really speak about it in various versions of separation. It was interesting when I read a book about David, the king of Israel, and it was based all on the biblical writings, and it was a wonderful book. But one of the things that happened was that when David was still a young man, he lived within the state or the area called Israel. And at some point, he was forced to leave. And in his mind at that time, God was the God of Israel. And he felt that leaving that geographical area, he was going to leave God, the Israeli God. And he was going to be subject to some other gods. And he didn't like the idea. You see what a kind of localized, tribal kind of notion he had. So when he left that geographical area, he still felt his connection and his communion with the God that he knew within him as his God. And so it broke down that kind of geographical area. And we all have that. We have places that are favorite places for us to go. Perhaps they're sacred spots. Some, when they come to India for the first time, they feel as if they truly are arriving home for the first time. Others can go to a certain cathedral or a temple or a mosque, and they feel that tremendous spiritual vibration, and it becomes localized in this way. They're not really happy unless they're there. But we must overcome this because we are out for the universal vision. We break down all the little separations that we have made around God. Certainly, we have to adopt notions of what God is and how to attain God. That is the second aspect of the Guru. They come to teach methods, because without any methods, how are we to do or to know what to do? We don't know. And so the Guru comes in various ways to teach us how to focus our minds. And when we focus our mind through a certain method upon God, it helps to purify the mind. Now, the method and the goal are not one and the same. They're two different things. But we need those methods. They quicken us and they carry the power of the Guru and the Guru lineage with them. Now, there are many who doubt the need for a guru. They say, I can do it. I've read a book. I've listened to a few lectures, and I'm on my own. And it truly is the blind leading the blind. Certainly, we have a right to our own thoughts, to our own feelings. We have free will. But when we apply ourselves with our free will, we become something more. It's the ultimate irony in life. Papa described and took on the name Ram Dass. Das means slave. Ram means God. It's God's slave. Well, with all the various associations of slavery around the world, that doesn't seem like a very appealing notion. Why would I want to become a slave? But when you become God's slave, that is, completely and totally abandon yourself and surrender yourself to God and Guru, a mysterious and wonderful thing happens. You become freed through your slavery, through your submission, through your surrender. It frees you. We don't know all the ways that we are bound, but we are bound. And through the Guru, we get the teachings in order to give us a focus for our attention and how to free ourselves from all the ways that we are bound. You see what a wonderful thing this is. And then the Guru goes right into the center of our soul. As I said, I did not have much contact with Mother in a physical sense in the first 4 or 5 years that I knew her. But it was gradually after that I got more and more personal time with her, gradually at first and then more and more. But always, I always felt a sincere sense of gratitude in this sense, that I was not dependent in this sense on the outer sense. Now, some people become almost indifferent to outwardly knowing or meeting the Guru. But really, if we examine that, most times there's fear. As Judy noted in her writing, she became afraid to approach Mother again. Sri Yukteswar asked Master to do a very interesting promise when they first met. He says, I want you to promise me never to avoid me. Now, this may seem like kind of a strange thing. Master is completely smitten with Sri Yukteswar. He recognizes the greatness of God within him. He desperately wants and needs his own realization and knows that Sri Yukteswar is the agent through which that can happen. But as Master noted, there were many blows that came to him. Now, blows can come by what the Guru does, or the test can come in other ways. There's many people who had tests with Mother around her humanness. Well, she's a human being just like me. If I sit down and talk with her, she doesn't really listen to me that much. She just starts talking. And she's telling me all about her experience as well. Is she filled up with ego, and is she only want to talk about me? We all know people who are like that. Their favorite subject is themselves. They're not really interested in anybody else. But this is not the motivation for Mother. Oftentimes she did speak, and she spoke from her own experience, and this is because through that transmission in her words and the vibration of her words was a tremendous spiritual power that came in and uplifted the soul, and it made the atoms of our bodies dance to a different tune. When we opened ourselves completely and wholly, a powerful spiritual vibration went out through those words, and it transformed us. And the stories were all lessons. One of the, test for me came, and sometimes Mother would begin to gossip about other devotees and say what this one had said and what this one and the other one had done. And I suppose there was the potential in there for me to think that I was wise as the Guru and I could begin to look down upon other people. But that wasn't my reaction, really. I knew that Mother was giving me great truth in the stories that she was teaching me. And every story that she was telling me was a cautionary tale, not about the other individual, but about me. What might I do? How might I be disrespectful to the Guru or go against the teachings or the wishes of the Guru? I needed to listen with keen attention because she was going down into the roots of my own separation from God. And she is reaching in and pulling them out. She wasn't telling me stories about others, even though it had other people's names attached to it. She was telling me about myself, and I better listen. Because even if I didn't think that that lesson was particularly tied to me in that moment, I learned later on that those same temptations, those same lessons would come back to me, and that I needed the kinds of things that she taught to me, the truth that she taught to me, the practical wisdom that she taught to me, everything that she gave to me. And it was all coming from her consciousness, the power of truth within her. So you see, how we attune ourselves to the Guru, how we receive the truth that the Guru comes to teach us is very important. That we don't avoid the Guru. That we don't keep ourselves away because it's uncomfortable for us. I remember that there was a time when Mother had her strokes and sometimes she would repeat the same stories. Now, repetition is oftentimes done in teaching because it's through repetition that we take it in deeper and deeper. There are many times that I listened to the entirety of talk of Mother and I could barely tell you what she spoke about because I felt the power within her and the transformation that came as a result. And I wasn't really in that part of my mind that was intellectually listening, although I was completely attuned and feeling every word and every vibration that was coming from her. But she would repeat stories, and people would go, "Oh, I've heard that story already." And they would walk away disappointed. And I would shake my head and wonder, because I thought to myself, I want to be in the same state of consciousness Mother is in when she's telling that story. And I knew very clearly that I wasn't. I had not achieved her state. It's not for the Guru to measure up to us. It's for us to measure up to the Guru. We oftentimes get it around backwards. Why is this story being told again? What is there in this for me? What do I need? What is down in my roots that need to be yanked up and pulled out? And am I open to that? Am I cooperating with that? Or am I resistant to it? Now, every guru comes with their own personality, their own way of being. Master was different from Mother. Mother was different from Papa. Papa's different than Ramana Maharshi. Swami Satchidananda was different from Papa. Very different personalities. Very different flavors of the one divine consciousness. But all totally God-attuned. All coming with a tremendous vibration and a tremendous power that had the potential to transform souls around them. Guru Purnima can be interpreted the fullness, the wholeness, is our appreciation, our attunement to the divine consciousness. It is here, it is then. It is in that state of consciousness that we can truly honor and appreciate the divine consciousness. It doesn't have to come through words. We can just be in silence. I don't remember who the individual is right now. But he traveled all the way from America. He's a philosopher, and he traveled to England to see a man that he wanted to meet. The man was in some club or other, and he was directed to him. And he sat down at a little distance from him. And he sat there for some time, and he absorbed the vibration of this other soul. And he got up, and he got back, right back on the steamship, and all the way went all the way back to America. Didn't exchange a word with him. And somebody said, "Did you meet him?" And he said, "Oh, yes, he's wonderful." That's attunement, listening deeply. And when we listen deeply, it awakens the Guru within, the Guru who's that teacher within. You listen to the Om coming in through the medulla. You listen to the vibration of the presence of the Divine that's resonating and within you, and that is the Guru within you. And then your mind becomes illumined, full, complete with the divine consciousness. And then you are forever one with God and Gurus. It is a living presence that is within you. We're invited to stay at a beach house, and on Guru Purnima night, about midnight, the moon was out full. It was shining on the water, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful sight. And I wrote this poem, My Guru Purnima Moon. O sacred Guru Purnima, you are the lofty moon, spiritful. You are high in the heavens, drawing all attuned souls to you. Symbol of enlightenment, stealer of devotees' hearts, your light illumines the night and makes all safe in your brilliant orb. O Guru Purnima, I bow to you. You are the sages of all the ages, standing shoulder upon shoulder in ever-heightening glory. Your infinite wisdom comes to me as my very own dearest Guru. Secured in the center of my heart, no longer veiled, you are with me, always and forever, even now. I write to you as a child, whatever my heart says, for I can do nothing else. I am your Das, your freely given slave, and through my slavery, you have freed me into eternity. Because this relationship is rare in this world does not mean that it is not true. One day, the world will recognize and honor the guru-disciple relationship in a way that it doesn't do today. We will lose fear, and the veils will drop off of our eyes, and we will see that this is the most wonderful, the most beautiful thing that can happen in our life. In all the years that I've been with Mother, I have not felt a diminishment, one iota, in my appreciation and keen regard for her as my guru, for all that she did for this world. In fact, it has only grown. My love has only grown. My appreciation has only grown. And I see her now before my inner eyes, smiling and beautiful and giving blessings to one and all. She is a divine presence that is always here. If we have eyes to see, ears to hear, a heart to feel. And I ask that she shower her blessings like so many petals falling upon you, and lift you into that eternal kingdom of spirit of which she is so identified and one with. And that whatever travail or difficulty you are having, she knows it. And her compassion reaches out to you. But it is not a compassion unto the weakness only, for she sees through whatever difficulties you are in. And she sees you as perfect and whole in divine union, your oneness with God. This is the power of the Guru, is to behold you in your true nature and thereby help to awaken it. If you please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the power of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. The Guru shines before my inner vision and illumines my mind, awakens my heart, and stirs my soul. Make me ever one with thee and know the power, the beauty, and the love of the Divine Spirit, ever residing within God and Guru. Om. bliss.
Bliss.
Amen. Pranams, I bow to God within you.